Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now from the UK is Francis Wheen, who is a journalist, broadcaster, and writer. He's a deputy editor of the satirical magazine Private Eye, and he's written for a variety of publications and regularly appears on such BBC programs as The News Quiz. His books include the award-winning biography Karl Marx: A Life, Idiot Proof: A Short History of Modern Delusions, and Strange Days Indeed: The Golden Age of Paranoia. Welcome to Background Briefing, Francis Wheen.
Thank you.
And I imagine...
Obviously, I'm still fainting with excitement, so I may be incoherent, but I'll do my best.
I know. The joy at a royal birth is overwhelming, isn't it? I mean...
Well, apparently it's universal, because... there was a thing earlier today on, I think, the Washington Post website saying, Britain awaits baby's arrival. But then the BBC News website said, the world waits while the Duchess is in labour, which is quite... You know, good going. The world waits, you know, from the Caucasian mountains, from Sierra Leone, Senegal, everywhere. Everything stops until they hear the news from London, and there they are. It reminds me, there's an old poem written about 100 years ago by G.K. Chesterton, ridiculing political hyperbole called Chuckett Smith, and it's all... Do they, you know, from in the lands where Christians were, and the little lands they bear from the... something mountains. Anyway, the gist of it is, do they really mind about these things all over the world? And the answer is, of course, they don't. But the depressing thing is that apparently in America they do, because I thought it was just our folly. But I also thought that the United States, that America fought a war of independence in the 18th century to get away from all this nonsense. But obviously I'm wrong. Maybe I'm old and my memory's going. I'm sure they did. Or you did, but apparently not, because, I mean, you can see the tabloids, perhaps, but I did just look up things like the New York Times and Washington Post, and there it is, main item on their websites, New York Times, Duchess of Cambridge gives birth to a boy, Washington Post, breaking news, Catherine, Duchess of Cambridge gives birth to son, it's a boy, and I was watching CNN and Fox News, and, oh, dear, oh, dear, I mean, any old things I could get hold of, just in case there was a refuge from this. But apparently there's no escape. And it is utterly bizarre to me. I mean, it's bizarre enough in this country to see how mad people go when anything royal happens. But it seems to me doubly distressing and insane.
Well, there may be a silver...
People on the other side of the Atlantic behave even worse.
Well, there may be a silver lining, though, in terms of reviving the depressed British economy. My understanding is that the royal birth will contribute an estimated $360 million boost for the British economy.
You've worked that out quite precisely, I can tell.
Well, this comes from the UK-based Centre for Retail Research.
I imagine, yeah, souvenir dolls, that
exactly.
Sort of thing. Yeah, no doubt there's 360 million in that.
Well, I think the one that
you may be right. That's the depressing thing. And I mean, we saw it, and not just the birth of royal babies, but, you know, the death of princesses. I mean, none of us can forget the death of Princess Diana and the kind of global spasm of emotional hysteria that went with that. Obviously a very sad business, you know, young woman cut off in her prime and in an accident, and that was all very sad. But I mean, the scale of the ululating and grieving and mourning, and particularly actually in America, I mean, there were whole things written about this, you know, psychiatrists saying that their clients took it personally and they felt that they were personally attached to Princess Diana and this affected them personally, and they, you know, their husbands didn't understand it quite often, but the women in particular, I'm sorry to say, really felt it was like a loss in the family. And I'm afraid to say that this is now happening with the birth of this baby. You know, it is like an addition to the family. They think, oh, it's our baby.
Well, this obviously burdens the poor queen, does it not? She has more siblings, not just in her own country, but in the Commonwealth. And now you've got all of these Americans sycophantically cloying at her royal gown and wanting to worship her, which is... I mean, maybe one of the toys, by the way, that's being sold to boost the British economy, apparently, is the Prince's potty chair. Have you heard about that one, that apparently people are queuing up to...
I'd rather not, actually. It sounds quite disgusting. Which, the prince's potty chair.
Right, right.
And will this there be diapers involved in this as well? Will there
Yes. There's a whole range of royal-related toys and souvenirs, including diapers.
Official royal diapers as used by royal... one-day-old royal princes.
Oh, I'm not sure about the recycled ones, but I imagine that there'll be a seal on it. Don't retailers compete to get the royal seal? Isn't that...
The other thing about it strikes me, is that people lose... You know, they take leave of their senses when something like this happens. And particularly with the American coverage, I mean, as I say, I really did think, you know, after all that effort you made to get rid of the British attachment... But then I was watching CNN just now, and Martha McCallum, who was co-anchoring the thing, an American co-anchor from Fox News, sorry, not CNN, Fox News, said that the British royal family has tremendously high approval ratings, higher than the US president. Americans love the royal family as well, which shows what a great country it is. And there was some guy from the Heritage Foundation confirming all this and saying this proves Britain is the greatest country in the world. And you think, stop genuflecting, stop being so needlessly sycophantic. You know, we're a sort of, you know, former imperial power who have vaguely half come to terms with our reduced status in the world, and please stop flattering us. We don't need it. It's very bad for us. It's especially, it's not to do with us. It's to do with a constitutional monarch who, sort of by some accident of birth, stays there. And it's also not a universal thing in the sense that the other line, of course, is, oh, well, everyone loves the birth of a baby, and the joy of this is, you know, that Prince William and Kate, or the Duke and Duchess of Cambridge, or whichever other pseudonyms they're operating under today, they're just like any other mum and dad, bonding with their baby and thinking of their baby. And you think, well, they're not exactly like any other mum and dad. You can't really identify with them or with their child because, you know, most of us, if we have children, you see the baby arrive and it's very moving and exciting, and perhaps you start wistfully dreaming and thinking about what might happen to this child as it grows up and what it might do and all the rest of it. But none of that applies in this case because we all know, as do they, perfectly well. Even when this baby is a few hours old, they know it's going to be a royal, it'll live a life of effortless privilege, and then it'll be king, eventually, one day. And that's it. You know, so its whole life is already mapped out for it.
Well, but according to the Daily Mail, apparently, in spite of the lofty privilege and world into which this 8-pound, what is it? No, 8-pound, 6-ounce baby has been born, according to the Daily Mail, Kate had planned a natural birth, being not too posh to push.
Yes, well, that's a well-known phrase in Britain.
Is it?
Do you not have that in America, too posh to push?
No,
it's all about elective caesareans. So, well, over here, celebs tend to have caesareans because they're said to be too posh to push.
Oh, I see. I didn't realize it was a well-worn phrase. I thought
what that means. It means people of a certain level of wealth and celebrity can't be bothered with the traditional methods, and they get on with an elective caesarean. And then, of course, because celebrities have elective caesareans, lots of non-celebrities who read the celebrity magazines think, oh, I want to have my baby just as this reality TV star did or this princess did. So I suppose you can give her that. At least she appears to have had a pushing birth. I mean, not that it matters that much, but my great sorrow is it wasn't a girl, I must say. That would have been fun. Because the one thing, I mean, when they say, oh, the world rejoices, had it been a girl, legally, it would not have been third in line to the throne, because we still haven't quite got around to changing the law that says that boys take precedence over girls. I mean, the reason our queen, who's been queen now for 60 years, ever got the gig was she had no brothers, so they had to give it to her. But had she had a brother, even a much younger brother, he would have been king.
Well, I thought they'd changed that law. I thought that in the leaders of the Commonwealth countries in 2011 changed that law that the babies...
Well, they were roped in, I think, about the time of the last royal wedding. And I think last year they sort of agreed, but I'm not sure it's been ratified by, you know, the British Constitution is such a mysterious object. It all has to be ratified by the Privy Council and by, you know, the monarch in state and 101 other things and the royal prerogative, whatever that means. And I'm not sure that it actually would have been in the same line to the throne had it been a girl born today. I don't think they've quite dotted all the I's and crossed all the T's yet. I may be wrong, but I think that's the case. And it would have then drawn, it would be like, you know, all those golf clubs where they hold the US Masters or the British Open or something, and they don't admit women. It would have been like that, which is always a slight embarrassment to everyone involved when the world's attention is on a particular place, and you then think, hang on a sec, why can't women do this? So I was rather rooting for a princess who would then have to have the law changed very urgently to make sure that she couldn't become a feminist victim.
Again, I'm speaking with Francis Wheen, who's in the UK. He's a journalist, a broadcaster and writer, and the deputy editor of the satirical magazine Private Eye. He's written for a variety of publications and regularly appears on such BBC's programmes as The News Quiz. His books include the award-winning biography Karl Marx, A Life, Idiot Proof, A Short History of Modern Delusions, and Strange Days Indeed.
Ian, I hate to say it, but it sounds to me as if you're choking up. You've got to get a grip on yourself, man. The emotion is getting the better of you.
I think so. I'm genuflecting here in the studio, just at the very...
What we actually need now is Tom Lehrer. The very word genuflect makes you think of Tom Lehrer, and you think, why can't he come out of retirement and write a song about this nonsense, and that would knock it on the head once and for all, surely to goodness.
Well, for some reason or other, we've been trying to figure out why the Americans, who had a revolution to get rid of the royals, why they are so enthralled by it. And I think when you quote people from the Heritage Foundation, it's not difficult to figure out that they are the think tank for the American privileged, for America's oligarchy that essentially runs this country. They bought the politics and they run the plutonomy that we have here.
That's a very good point, that oligarchies, you know, there is a kind of Masonic solidarity among oligarchs and autocrats of various kinds. And so they do stick together. And actually, what I was remembering when this baby was born, that back in about end of 1986, I was in North Korea, in Pyongyang. And in those days, there wasn't much to do in central Pyongyang. And the only shop that we were allowed to go in, pretty well the only shop that existed, was a stamp collecting shop. And we went in there, and they had all these, well, half the stamps are, you know, Kim Jong-il and Kim Il-sung giving on-the-spot guidance, and North Korean troops bayoneting American troops saying death to the US imperialist aggressor. But the other half were all pictures of Charles, Diana, Prince William, Prince Harry, who, by you know, had just been born at that stage. And they had endless first day covers to mark, you know, the birthdays of the young princes, the wedding anniversaries of Charles and Diana, and all this stuff. And I couldn't understand. I thought, why would North Korea, of all countries, make such a big thing of this? And it then dawned on me, of course, that in a country like North Korea, where there is a dynasty, you know, a dynastic line, passing it down from Kim Il-sung to Kim Jong-il and now Kim Jong-un, it is essentially a royal family, a hereditary monarchy. And so, of course, the world goes around saying North Korea, completely bonkers, mad state. And it's their way of saying, well, other countries do this, you know, and no one calls them mad. The British do this. They have the Queen, and then her son will be king after that, and after that, Prince William will be king. That's how it works there, and no one seems to think it's bonkers or mad or anything. And I thought it was a wonderful joke of the North Koreans to take such an interest in the births and marriages of the British royal family, because they felt a kindred spirit. And so it's exactly your point about oligarchs, that it's kind of an advertisement for oligarchy. It's awful.
Well, indeed, I cover national security affairs, and I've talked to, obviously, because North Korea periodically misbehaves and threatens nuclear war. So I talk to specialists in think tanks around the world about North Korea, and the more intelligent ones say that, of course, we've got it all wrong. We think of it as a communist country, but indeed, the closest comparison would be Imperial Japan in the 1930s, and that's what they've modeled themselves on a dynastic royal family. And it's not about communism so much as dynasty and the infallible perfection of royalness.
When I went to North Korea, by then Prince Charles and Princess Diana had pretty much split up, and they were, you know, there was endless feuding and rowing, and it was obvious that the marriage had fallen apart. But of course, the tightly controlled North Korean news had not revealed this fact, because that might raise questions about the ruling dynasty in Pyongyang. And so the woman who ran this stamp collecting shop, who spoke no English, you know, we tried to demonstrate to her, show her, that actually Charles and Diana, it hadn't really worked out. And she couldn't understand it, so my two friends who were with me, there was a friend of mine who writes for Rolling Stone magazine and a friend of mine who was a BBC presenter in Britain. We were all disguised as tourists, pretending not to be journalists. We then reenacted the royal wedding of Charles and Diana. I was playing the Archbishop of Canterbury, and the other two played Charles and Diana, and they went up the aisle, here comes the bride, or something, and then they started punching each other. And the woman then got the message, and she said, and he said, yes, I'm afraid it's not really worked out. And she was really distressed, at which point I think our minders from the tourism department took us away, because we had broken the news to a North Korean that these hereditary dynasties don't always work quite as they're meant to, and they can lead to a lot of grief for all concerned. But they didn't know that, and in North Korea, funny enough, I just looked up, when not looking at the New York Times and the Washington Post and all these other people going into full sycophantic nonsense mode, I did actually look up the Korean Central News Agency, the North Korean news agency, just to see if it had picked up on this news yet. But they're a bit slow out there. I'm afraid they're not quite into the digital age yet. So their lead story on the North Korean news agency tonight is, or this evening, is Premier makes field survey of farming in South Hwanghae province. But I reckon, quite soon, when word reaches Pyongyang, they will find a way to tell the North Korean people this happy news that another generation has been born, which will rule them in due course, which will rule the British in due course, just as, eventually, Kim Jong-un will no doubt have his own little equivalent of William and Kate's child, who will also be their ruler, if it doesn't all fall apart. And actually, it's going to be a race against time to see which of them falls apart first, and I suppose it'll be the North Korean one, because annoyingly, there is, although I'm a Republican, in Britain, it's a fairly lonely job being a Republican in Britain with a small R rather than capital. But I would have hoped that in America, both Republicans with a capital R and Democrats and everyone else, would have at least absorbed that lesson of the War of Independence and thought, well, one thing we don't have is hereditary rulers. We just have people called Bush and Clinton every few years instead. Again, it's rather your point about ruling families. I'm afraid to say ruling elites perpetuate themselves in interesting ways, even in supposed republics and democracies.
Well, I guess we can only wait for a royal visit to North Korea or vice versa. But just returning in the last minute here, Francis Wheen, to the royal birth that we're all celebrating here on both sides of the Atlantic, I guess the next momentous event will be the choosing of the names. I understand that the British bookmakers are feverish over royal fever, baby fever, and that will be perhaps even announced, I believe, according to CNN's royal correspondent, Max Foster, that the baby's names will be announced before the family leaves the hospital. So
I rather hope the prince will be called Piers Morgan. I think those would be very nice names for it. And it would celebrate the great transatlantic sycophancy.
Right.
It means that even 250 years or whatever it is after you broke away, you still allow nauseating British sycophantic customs and people to dominate your news and indeed anchor your shows on CNN. It's just...
Well, he, of course, has raise the level of unctuousness to an art form, and which, of course, celebrities...
Yeah, I know, it's rather like what John Reed or somebody said about the Russian Revolution. I have seen the future, and it smirks. And I'm afraid that is Piers Morgan to a T.
Well, I thank you very much for sharing the royal joy with me across the Atlantic here, Francis Wheen.
We're dancing for joy here in the fields of Essex. We'll be lighting fireworks shortly and getting very drunk and singing celebratory songs about the joys of living in a monarchy that was imported from Germany back in the 18th century at about the time when the Americans decided to cut themselves off from it.
Right, and this was the same family.
God bless them all, I'm sure.
Yeah, and this was the same family that had a royal squabble that manifested itself in the form of the World War I, in which millions of their loyal subjects were killed on both sides. So.
Well, indeed. Queen Victoria's daughter, Vicky, who also called Victoria, married basically the Emperor of Germany, of Prussia, and had things turned out otherwise.
Right. Well, their name is actually the Battenbergs. They've changed it, of course. They've anglicised.
Yeah, Saxe-Coburg-Gotha, yes, that's right. Yeah, they changed it to Windsor because it sounded a tiny bit more English. so they all, you know, they pretend to be the Merry Wives of Windsor, but in fact they're all Battenbergs.
Well, I thank you again for joining us.
Not that we're anti-German in any way.
No.
The Germans, really, but we've had, well, over 200 years now being ruled by German monarchs, and we'd quite like, you know, an Irish monarch or a French monarch or anything, frankly, you know, just for a bit of a change of scenery, change of language.
Well, we all live in hope, and thank you so much for joining us here today, Francis Wheen.
Right. Thank you.
Again, I've been speaking with Francis Wheen, who is a journalist, broadcaster, and writer in the UK. He's the deputy editor of the satirical magazine Private Eye, and he's written for a variety of publications and regularly appears on such BBC programs as The News Quiz. His books include the award-winning biography Karl Marx: A Life, Idiot Proof, A Short History of Modern Delusions, and Strange Days Indeed, The Golden Age of Paranoia. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon and assistant producer Claire Goldsmith. This program is available for podcasting at ianmasters.com. You can also contact me, and I'll be back again tomorrow at 5 p.m. with another Background Briefing. Bye for now.